everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week, I have a repeat guest because he's so fabulous, Jeb Blunt. We talked with Jeb probably a year ago now on his book, Fanatical Prospecting, which I do recommend that everyone have in their shelf. I have my version because it's available at airports, on bookstores, on online. And now he's come out with a fabulous book called Sales EQ, The New Psychology of Selling. Welcome, Jeb, to the podcast.
Thank you for having me back. I love to be on your podcast. I can't believe it's been a year, but I was just thinking it has been a year.
That's too long. I know. You need to write more books. Get out there. I just downloaded my copy of Sales EQ, and I love where you're going with this. Tell the audience what happened? What made you decide to do a book that I think this is one of those books, everyone, that's going to be a resource book that you're going to go to again and again and again. And you're probably going to have it earmarked. You're probably going to have it underlined if you're an old timer like me, highlighted. What caused you to get this book out?
We are in a world that is being overwhelmed with technology, and it's what everybody talks about, the digital world. And technology is great. It is awesome. It has done so many things for us. It's made life easier. It gives us the ability to connect with anyone, really anywhere, anytime, on any device. It's just striking how it's changed our lives. And in the middle of all of that, the world has changed a good bit. And you know, buyers are more afraid than they've ever been before to make a change. The Great Recession didn't help that any. And at the same time, we have an entire generation of salespeople who are coming out into the sales force who have basically lived their life with people in an abstract. In other words, they've communicated via text or via Snapchat or, you know, via Facebook for those that are in their, you know, their early 20s. And no one taught them how to interact with other human beings. At the same time, these buyers who are afraid because of all of the disruptive change that are hitting them, they've gotten a little bit raw with salespeople who just waste their time, who come in and, you know, and pitch and talk about themselves. And, you know, in the pre-show, we were talking about sending emails where the first line of the email is about the seller. They're sick of it and they're exasperated with it. And a number of books have come out that have been trying to address this. Insight Selling, Challenger Sales, which was a really big book. And what I noticed was a lot of my clients who were adopting things like Challenger Sale were failing at it miserably because the system and the process looks really, really good, but they weren't able to actualize it at the human level. And in these, you know, in a sales relationship, I call it an artificial relationship. I mean, it's not the type of relationship you have anywhere else in your life. It's two strangers basically who come together to accomplish something, neither of them trusting each other, extremely emotional because no one wants to fail or lose or be taken. And everybody's looking to get the outcome that's in their best interest. And very few relationships you have like that. And so it puts both buyer and seller in this extreme emotional vice. And the advice is go challenge them, go talk at them. We send them stupid emails that don't engage them emotionally. And there was just a hole. And just spending time with my clients, I noticed that there was a hole. So this is a follow-up to Fanatical Prospecting with the rest of the story, which is for sellers, how do you manage your own disruptive emotions so that you have the ability to influence the emotions of other people? And for the sellers working with buyers, how do you help the buyer connect with you emotionally so that as they're walking through the buying journey with you, whether it's from the very beginning when you're reaching out to them and asking them for time, all the way through if you're an account executive going, you know, all the way to the close, how are you doing it in a way so that the buyer or the stakeholder, whoever you're working with, has this amazing emotional experience and they become connected to you and they're buying you and not the product or the service? And which in today's world, in most cases, when you have competitors, all things are equal. They're all about the same. And you become the differentiator that eventually gets the deal closed. That's a long answer to a short question, but I hope that makes sense.
It does. And I think, you know, there's a couple points that I want to make sure, you know, hit home with my folks. The first is the work that I've done teaches how to get to that first conversation. But as Jeb said, what he's done in this book is to teach you how to overcome your fear when you're actually, when you actually have someone on the other end say, hello, you know, and what do you do from that point of view? I mean, I don't teach that, and I get you up to that point. But Jeb actually walks you through how to not only have those conversations so that you get both of you to the desired outcome of whatever the call is, but how to sort of put that fear, anxiety, whatever it is that's inside of your being, how to control and maintain that so that you can have a compelling conversation with your buyer. So let's talk a little bit about that. What kinds of fears are you seeing, or what are the main obstacles that we put in our own way in order to effectively have that first conversation?
One of the biggest problems that salespeople have, crazy as it sounds, is they are hyper empathic. And this is especially true for outreach professionals, people who are picking up the phone and reaching out to strangers, essentially, and asking them for their time. And by the way, I think it's important to understand that asking someone for their time is the hardest ask in sales. And it's one of the reasons when I'm working with account executives, I look them dead in the eye and say, if you can't pick up the phone and ask for time, I can never trust you to ask for money. Therefore, you have a responsibility to be in the trenches with your SDRs, supplementing the work that they're doing with prospecting. You have to be there. And for SDRs and BDRs, when you are picking up the phone and calling strangers and asking for time, know that you are doing the most difficult job in the sales world. So if we think about it, one of the big issues that, say, an SDR has when they're asking for time or they're picking up the phone and calling is when you're hyper-empathic. And that means that, say, for example, on a scale of 1 to 10 for empathy, which, by the way, is the meta skill of the 21st century. I mean, empathy, if you have a great deal of empathy in sales, you can step into your buyer's shoes and understand them. But if you're too empathetic, what happens is you start projecting onto the potential prospect. So you feel like asking for time is too pushy, or when you get a brush off, getting past that brush off and asking for the meeting anyway, you're being too pushy, and you begin to think about that, and you begin to worry about that. And then that kicks off something called fight or flight, which is, you know, which is an autonomic response that you have for feeling a threat. And that creates a neurochemical reaction in your body that makes your heart beat and your muscles tense up and you can't think very well. And this is what happens when you get an objection or you get rejected. That kicks on. But you can make that happen through worry. And that's one of the big issues. Now, the other problem that you have, and this is another issue for, say, SDRs and BDRs, is you can be, on the other side of the thing, which is on the scale towards narcissistic or, being extremely self-centered. People who are extremely self-centered at times can make really, really good SDRs because you're calling up, you're reaching in, you're asking for time, and all you want is the appointment and you moved on to the next one. But the moment that you have to do a deeper level of qualification, the moment that you have to engage another human being, if you are not able to disrupt that self-centric desire and be more empathetic, you won't make a real human connection. You won't be authentic, and you won't be able to deep dive and gather the information that you need. And oh, by the way, when you're thinking about moving, leveling up in your organization and getting promoted into a higher level sales job, if you're unable to disconnect from your inward focus, your self-centric focus, and be more empathetic, it'll be very difficult for you to make that move. So it's as weird as it sounds, because when we think about empathy, we think about empathy being a good thing. It's a double-edged sword for salespeople.
Wow. Yeah, I think one of the things I'm sure is resonating with the folks listening right now is, we get to that first conversation, we may have some jitters, but we get time. And so then the next meeting is set where we're supposed to do an Are We a Fit call, which is a top level qualification in some organizations. And then in some organization, it actually dives into an hour long call with one stakeholder and then followed by 2 hour call or so with multiple stakeholders. But I think that first conversation, is the one where people see the lag or the ability to continue that sale stall. And from what I'm hearing, what you're saying is that there is a process, since I'm a process expert, there is a process that they can learn of how to not only determine where they are, but also determine where your buyer is along that empathy scale. Is that correct?
That's correct. And if you think about, we'll talk about fight or flight. So this is one of the biggest issues that face all humans. We have a natural process inside of our brains for keeping us alive. And our brain responds to threats. There's a little part of your brain called the amygdala. It's the hub for all your sensory information. And when it senses that you are being threatened, it sends off these signals that release adrenaline into your bloodstream and cause a whole lot of crazy things to happen to get you ready to either run away or defend yourself. Now, the problem for us as human beings is that it responds to two types of threats. One of those threats is physical threat. So if you are being physically threatened, it rightly so gets you ready to run away or to defend yourself. Mm-hmm. But you also feel threatened because of human beings are pack animals. We feel threat to our social standing. So when you think you're going to get rejected or you think you're in a situation where the person may say no to you. And a great example of that for moving a deal forward into the pipeline, for asking for the next step, is if we ask for the next step, the person might say no. So a lot of our early conversations end up going nowhere because the prospect says, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you give me a call next week? And the salesperson says, sure, that'll be fine. I'll call you next week. And then you never get them back on the telephone again.
Right.
And the reason is that you failed to get in the way of the disruptive emotion of being afraid of being threatened, of running away from that, and just asking for the next meeting. Because if you ask for the next meeting and they say no to you, it tells you a lot about how qualified they are to keep moving forward. It tells you a lot about their engagement. And what top salespeople, I call them ultra high performers, do is they're constantly testing that with asking for the next step. But to do that, you have to get past this emotional rush called fight or flight that happens without your consent. You have to get past that. So you have to teach yourself to, despite how you feel, I don't want to be too pushy, or I don't want to put this person in a situation where they tell me no, or I don't want them to be uncomfortable. You have to push past that and ask respectfully and politely, but assertively for the next step, for the next commitment, for a micro commitment along the way. And until you understand that, we walk you through that process in the book, until you understand how that works, you're never going to get past that. And I think the big thing, Lou, about emotions is this, is the book doesn't teach you how to stop your emotions, because you can't. All the emotions that you feel happen without your consent. You have zero control over that.
Right.
What it teaches you is in the context of a sales relationship, which is different than anything else that you have in your life, how to put in systems, and you're a systems and process person, and processes to check those emotions, those disruptive emotions, so you become aware of what's happening and you're able to get control of yourself. In other words, you're able to rise above your emotion, and the emotions can be happening, but consciously and rationally rise above them versus being tossed around by them.
You know, that's a perfect example of stopping right now and correlating that to when we're working on the email engine and we're working on these levels of awareness. We're trying to figure out where in the thought process a buyer is. So I've taught my folks to be able to articulate where that is and also to track where that is. Well, what Jeb's saying is the same thing needs to happen with your patterning, with the way that you handle certain situations. And awareness is the first step of becoming more of a master at it, knowing that you are who you are, you're going to feel what you feel, but getting that awareness around why you feel the way you do and at what point you feel the way you do will allow you to overcome that. Is that correct, Jeb?
That's absolutely. And that's the universal law of awareness of sales. And that says that you can't be successful in sales and delusional at the same time.
Yes.
So you have to be aware. And I think it's probably fair to say that because we're human, in a lot of cases, we can't even see our, you know, our reaction. We don't even feel it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just happening to us. And one of Dr. Kahneman, one of the people that I quote in the book, who wrote Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, said that, you know, humans are unique in that we're blind to the obvious. And a lot of times the obvious is happening. Like we're feeling fear and we're holding back, and we know that we should ask for what we want, but we don't. So we feel this fear. But he says we're blind to the obvious, and then we're blind to our blindness. And he's exactly right. So what ultra high performing salespeople do is they create mechanisms to help them be able to see. So for example, qualifying is one of those mechanisms. If I understand what an ideal qualified prospect looked like, and I can look at the empirical data that tells me that this prospect is qualified, and over time I can look at the emotional data that says that the stakeholder is qualified. So for example, if I ask them a question and they give me a long answer, tells me they're engaged. If I ask a question and they give me a one-word answer, I got some work to do because they're not engaged. There's an emotional wall up. And if I'm not sensitive to that, if I'm not paying attention to that, if I'm not listening to that emotionally, then I've got a problem. But if you teach yourself to listen deeply to those emotions, then even though that particular persona, that style of only giving you a little bit of information, and typically you're going to find that in people who are analyzers, right? So they're, you know, accountants and CFOs, those type of people. Instead of shutting down and then you starting to talk over them, you recognize I'm going to need to go a little slower here because I can't move forward until this person begins giving me long answers, or until this person leans forward, or until this person changes their tone of voice so that they sound like this is something that's important to them. I need to change the way I'm doing things. The same check and balance. If I have a deal that is qualified on paper, but I can't get the key stakeholders to agree to the next meeting. I mean, I can beat my chest all I want to. I can, you know, I can throw all the information I want to. I can do all the pitching that I want to, but that deal is going to stall in my pipeline. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be able to move it forward with a hope or a wish. So, but the reason most of that happens, like deal stalling and not paying attention to qualifying and working on low probability deals, almost all of that, almost 100% of it is caused by disruptive emotions, not the system. It's your delusion. It's your inability to understand that your fear and your insecurity and your desperation and your attachment, all of those things are coming into play, and they're keeping you from getting what you want. And what top salespeople do very, very well is they learn to control their emotions. And another way of looking at this is in any sales conversation, the person in that conversation who has the most control over their emotions has the highest probability of getting the outcome that they desire.
Wow. That speaks volumes right there, for sure. Now, in chapter 5, I think it was, you talk about the 4 levels of sales intelligence. Does this apply to an SDR role, or is it an AE role, or is it anyone in sales, in any sales capacity?
It's anyone in any sales capacity, and I'll roll through them really quickly. There's innate intelligence. That's your IQ. That's how smart you are, and that's unmovable. That's like talent. It's baked into your DNA. Every single person is as smart as they're going to be. If we were to just, we'll do an extrapolation, and we'll think about your audience. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably have an above average IQ. Because people who have above average IQs most of the time are working on ways to improve themselves. And in sales today, I think that's important. It's really, really hard. And with the complexity that we face in the environment that we're in today, with the rapid disruptive change, to have a low IQ and be successful. But IQ is not nearly enough. You also have to have acquired knowledge, and that's what you get from going onto your website and reading things, reading our books, and paying attention to everything that's around you. It only works right if you have if you are able to learn through adversity, if you're able to read books, if you're able to grow, that's acquired knowledge. What acquired knowledge does is it makes your IQ relevant. It makes it useful for you in different capacities. It's no different than a top athlete who goes and gets a good coach that turns them into an elite athlete. From there, we have technological intelligence, and that is today our ability to interact with and work with machine learning and with artificial intelligence and with technology, and integrate it into our lives in a way that gives us more time for the things that are most important in our lives, and that's human beings. And if you're in sales today, this is a requirement. There is a wave of technology rolling over the sales world. And if you don't wake up and if you don't learn how to adapt to a technology and bring it into your life, you are going to be left behind. And the days of, I didn't know how to use that because nobody taught me, or I'm not really good with computers, or I'm not really good with technology, if those words escape your lips, go look in the mirror and have a good talk with yourself, because you will be unemployed. You have to learn how to interact with technology, and you have to be able to use technology, by the way, to help you acquire more knowledge. And then finally, there's emotional intelligence, and that's EQ. So we have, IQ, AQ, TQ, and EQ. And emotional intelligence is your ability to perceive, control, and own your own emotions, while at the same time responding appropriately to the emotions of other people so that you can influence their behavior. And for me, this is called cell-specific emotional intelligence. For us, this is everything. This is the fuel of ultra-high performance. This is what pulls all of those together. Because there are people who have high IQ, who know a lot of stuff and are great with computers, that can't get along with a wall. And there are people who have, high IQ, and they may be deficient in some of those other areas, and it fills that in. So you have to, as a salesperson, you have to focus on being, raising your AQ, raising your TQ, and raising your EQ. You can't do anything about your IQ. And what I'll tell you is that we call them high Q people. That's a stupid thing to call them, but I can't think of anything else. But we call them high Q people. High Q people will own the world. And yeah. Another way of looking at this, and this is a really harsh thing to say, but in the future, there are going to be two types of salespeople. There are going to be salespeople who tell robots what to do, and there are going to be salespeople who are told what to do by robots. Trust me, you want to be in the first group.
Indeed. So as I was reading through the book, another area that I know my crowd gets stuck on is the concept of qualification. Now, there's always arguments. Even my business partner disagrees with me because I use the word disqualification as opposed to qualification. He hates that. But I'm more about trying to get rid of the junk out of the pipeline. But I know there's probably a more elegant way to look at this. And I think one of the chapters in your book really focused on this concept or the topic of qualification and how to do it right. Would you mind sharing that with the audience?
Yeah, I think you are right, by the way. If we look at ultra high performing sales reps, and these are the people that are in the top 1-5% of their peer group, one of the things that ultra high performers have the ability to do is walk away from deals. And they'll invest, months and months and months in a deal, and they'll get up one day and leave it. Because they live in something called win probability, which I know is something that is near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
They look at every single deal, and they say, what is my probability of either moving this to the next step and then ultimately to win it? Because, you can only move a deal forward one micro commitment and one next step at a time.
Right.
So their qualifying process begins with a mindset of, I spend my time on the highest probability deals. Here's the thing. For salespeople, and this is what you have to understand, your success will always be limited by how you choose to spend your time. Let's say it one more time. Your success as a salesperson will always be limited by how you choose to spend your time. So if you choose to spend your time on low probability deals, you are going to fail. If you spend your time on high probability deals, you're going to succeed. And the higher probability of the deal, the more money you're going to make, the more deals you're going to put in the pipeline, the more your pipeline is going to be robust and it's going to be moving and it's going to have a high velocity from start to finish. The problem for us is that when we try to assess win probability, the human cognitive bias called sunk cost fallacy comes into play. And what that means is that as human beings spend more and more effort, and whether it's time, whether it's treasure, putting money into it, or whether it's putting emotion in something, we become more attached to something and we become delusional about the probability that it will happen again. And there are a number of biases. One of the biases called attribution bias that makes it very hard for human beings to assign probability factors to a particular event because we are biased by the other events that happened around us. And then there are some salespeople who have something called the overconfidence bias, and they think that they have the ability to close something that no one could close. It would be impossible to close. Like the greatest salesperson in the world could never close it. Agmandino couldn't close it, right? So nobody could close it. And so you have all of these human biases, all these emotions around what win probability looks like. The only way to manage that is through a system of qualification that allows you to understand the qualification, touch points of a prospect, or the data points of a prospect, so that you have the ability to look at it objectively. Now, there are some parts of qualification that are not objective. I mean, you know, is a stakeholder engaged or not is not objective. However, if a stakeholder refuses to go to the next step or refuses to live up to their commitments or refuses to match my effort or doesn't match my effort, that's empirical evidence that the engagement, the emotional engagement, isn't there. So I build a process. It's a 9-frame process that allows you over time to better qualify your prospect. And any qualification method that you choose to use, BANT, MEDIC, WOLF, PACT, any of the qualification acronyms that you use out there fit into this process to allow you to be aware of whether or not your deal is qualified. And in the chapter, something you'll have to read more about, we talk about murder boarding, which is the process of using that 9-frame process inside the sales process to become even more aware of where you are in a deal and does it matter. But I'll tell you, and I wrote this in the book, and this is true for Phenomenal Prospecting as well and the other 6 books that I wrote, there's nothing that I can teach you in a book that will help you if you're working with a prospect that's not qualified. You can be the greatest human being in the world. You can have the highest EQ. You can be smart beyond your years. You can be the greatest closer, greatest phone caller, greatest appointment setter that there ever lived. If you're dealing with a prospect that is not qualified, you will fail. So I go back to what you said, disqualifying. One of the things that ultra-high performers are constantly doing is they're looking at their pipeline deals, and they are making decisions about whether to take them out, not whether to keep them in. And it's a different way of looking at things.
It is, but thank you for saying that, because it's my mindset. It has always been my mindset. And it's not that I don't love all my prospects. It's that I know that there are certain ones that are going to be more profitable early on. And it's all about, for me, is high revenue, high likelihood of closing. And then now as I get older, it's, do I love my clients is one of my qualifiers too, but not so much when I was younger, but definitely now as I'm getting older, there's a love component to all of this for me that definitely has a play.
I've got the square that I like to play, and I use this 4-square matrix for fit. And I look at, are you easy to work with and highly profitable? Yeah. So that's where I want to spend my time. I was on the phone with a big a client of ours who is growing bigger and bigger, and there's a big opportunity for us inside this big client. And I'm on the phone with the person who is an influencer, and like, we're supposed to be having this dog and pony show, and I'm saying, but listen, here's the deal. This is beyond business for me. I love you guys. Right. The only reason I want to keep working on this is because I really have a fun time working with you. I have such a good time working with you that I almost should pay you for the opportunity. And those are the clients that I want. I want to work with people that I like. But let's stop and talk about a 25-year-old, because I had someone give me this advice early on in my career, and they said the greatest thing about sales is that you don't have to work with people that you don't like. Because as a sales professional, if you can prospect and you can manage a pipeline and you can qualify properly, you can fill in the gap. If there's a prospect out there that's hard to work with, they don't treat you well, they don't value you, they don't value your team, they don't value the conversations, they're not engaged, they make everything hard, you don't have to do that. You don't have to spend time with them. You can go get three more that'll be so happy that you're working with them and helping them. And I took that to heart, and I've walked away from a lot of clients and a lot of opportunities where I just looked at it and said, life is too short to deal with this jerk.
Right, right. No, and part of me is, I wish all my clients were like that, but sometimes we are given records to work, especially in the more high volume shops. And, we don't get to choose sometimes who we're going to be working on. And so that component of freedom that I would think that we experience as entrepreneurs, solos, or people who are allowed to build our own pipelines is not there for people. So the next best step is to really focus on, and I'm so glad you agree with me, on the disqualification, because of the fact that we have technology, we have process, we have the ability to build a good enough pipeline so that we don't experience those peaks and valleys, and we have more of an even keel approach. I have a question for you, Jeb, because it's interesting. I talked with one of your colleagues who we all love, and he uses the word discipline. And I have a problem with discipline, because I think discipline is for folks that are, like I think of Marines, or I think of people who are just, every day, boom, we're going to get this done. We're going to get this done. What I like to teach my folks is that, yes, we need discipline, but I want you to work towards habit, because I think habit is more of getting up in the morning, brushing your teeth. It's getting up in the morning, doing your prospecting. What do you feel? What would you call this process that we're trying to get people to do in the prospecting world? Is it habit? Is it discipline? Or is it something else? What is your term for it?
This is a great question. I wouldn't say I'm the most disciplined person in the world. I get a lot done. I want to step back on that last conversation we had, and I want to clarify, because I want to make sure people aren't hearing me the wrong way. No salesperson has the choice of who they work on, because you have a database. You have a choice of who you work with. And there's a difference there, because okay, once you get them into your pipeline, right, then at that point you begin making decisions. Is this a prospect that I want to continue on this journey with? And to me, that discipline, right, the discipline to be able to say, in the pipeline, based on everything that I see here, me spending another minute of my time on this deal isn't going to be worth it, because if I take this time and I invest it in this deal, I'm going to make twice as much money, I'm going to have a better outcome, and I'm going to close it quicker.
Got it.
But discipline, that discipline, it's the emotional discipline, mm-hmm, the emotional discipline to overcome your natural tendency to hold on to something that's not going to close versus being able to make good decisions in that emotional stew for you. That's where I see discipline.
Okay.
I think on the, like when we talk about prospecting, for example, one of the things that you'll notice in the very best prospectors is they're consistent. So we could call it habit, but they're unbelievably consistent. So a great example is I'll see salespeople, and one day they're doing this and one day they're doing that, and the results are changing all over the place. They're up and they're down, they're up and they're down. And you challenge them on that. You say, you don't have a plan. You don't come in every day, and you have a system that you run. And they'll go, well, dude, I don't really like being held down, or anything like that. I can't, like to keep things loose and do whatever I want to do, because you just never know what's going to happen. Those people are typically average to mediocre salespeople. They don't have a plan or a system or a process. Then you have the people that crush it. Every day they crush it. The pipeline is always full. And what you notice about them is that they have a habitual, you use your word, habitual system. They're consistent. They come in, and every morning they have the same cup of coffee at exactly the same time. They open up their computer. They turn everything off. They get rid of all the noise. They sit down. They do their outbound phone block. Then they stop. Then they enter into their database. Then they work on their email block. Then they do this. Then they move into this. They've just got a consistent process and habit for managing every single day. And when I think about prospecting and filling the pipeline, to me, like, that's the foundation. If you don't have a foundational system for doing it, you're just going to fail. In fanatical prospecting, I said, I mean, I make this claim all the time, because I think there's a difference between prospecting and sales, is that, you know, prospecting is full contact. There's not a lot of nuance here. I mean, I'm interrupting someone's day, and I'm asking them to give me their time, hardest ask in sales. And when we add, you know, your predictable system into it, I'm calling the right people every day with the right message, who are also strangers, and asking them for their time, right?
So
what's the nuance in that? And our favorite friend that we were just talking about said to me last night on a telephone call, you know, we're doing this big conference, and we need to change everything else up there. And I'm incredulous. I'm like, what's there to change up? This is freaking prospecting. I mean, you know, there's like 10 steps, do those things over and over and over again.
Right.
I promise you'll be successful. You know, so, you know, that's what's maddening about it. And discipline is impulse control, right? It is emotional intelligence. It's self-control. It is giving up what you want now for what you want most. That's what I mean by discipline.
Right.
But the discipline of the yes sir, no sir, you know, having a lifestyle that is so structured that you don't have any fun. I think that's what you and I probably think of, and like a lot of sales people think of. I can't say that I'm that type of a disciplined person, because I'm not, but I'm extremely disciplined with the emotional decisions that I have to make when it comes to prospects in my pipeline. Extremely disciplined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I really would love my folks to get to the point of is it's analogous to naps. You know, taking a nap every day is probably a good thing, especially someone getting it up in years like I am. It's like 20-minute nap is a good thing. It's not something that I really do every day, but I know it's good for me. Prospecting is the same way. You have to sort of build up to knowing in your heart that it's good for you to do. It's going to be the driver for growth in your pipeline. And I'm not saying that if you're doing all roles, if you're prospecting, selling, servicing accounts, you can't possibly prospect every day. I don't prospect every day, but I do have on my wall a board that says Tuesdays and Fridays, I am prospecting, and I do it in blocks. Now, my blocks are short. I put 33.33 on my phone and then hit start as a countdown, and I prospect during 33 minutes and 33 seconds of time. And then when I'm done, I'm done. But I'm only doing that single task, and that has made me very successful with a pipeline that I can't possibly work the opportunities because I'm just me. And that's where I want you guys to get. But what Jeb offers is the ability to, once you get somebody on the phone, you can create a compelling reason for them to want to move forward with you and lean into that phone thinking, wow, these people really know, this person really knows what's bothering me, what my challenges are. I want to continue the conversation with that person. And to do that, you really need to dive deep into who you are, how you think, what your fears are, and also that of your buyer, where they're at in their thought process. And I think the Sales EQ book just is mind-boggling. There's so much information in there in how to go about doing that.
Awesome. I like that.
So now the question is, okay, we've got the book. We're kind of process people. What do you have for us? How do we kind of take this book and use it as a resource to actually start putting these practices in place and start to internalize them into our DNA so that we are going to be awesome on the phone or awesome in our emails as we go forward? How do we continue our education?
This is what's both beautiful about and a little bit disheartening about emotional intelligence. Now, and we define it as self-specific emotional intelligence because the emotional intelligence traits that you need in the context of a sales conversation are a little bit different than what you need as a leader or a parent or a teacher or, you know, even a fireman because of the nature of the commercial relationship that you're in. The thing about emotional intelligence is that it is a lifelong endeavor. every day of my life, I have to work at managing and building and growing my emotional intelligence. The good news is that emotional intelligence is something that you can absolutely grow and you can become better at and you can improve. But it is ongoing, always on. So the first step is get the book, Sales EQ. I promise you'll like it. If you don't, call me up. I'll give you a refund. You'll love it.
You'll love it.
Understand what emotional intelligence is. So read about disruptive emotions. Understand the four foundational components of Sales EQ. Once you understand that, really the rest of the book, every single chapter in the book, almost stands alone. I don't know if you noticed that, but you could open the book and take any chapter in the book and read it, and it would almost be independent of everything else. But you have to start with the foundation of managing your own disruptive emotions. So if I said go do something right now, I would tell you to do two things. I would say take out a piece of paper and put it on the desk long ways and draw three columns and write trivial, important, and impactful. And for a week, take a look at how you spend your time. Are you spending your time on trivial things, things that don't matter in the whole scheme of things, things that are important? And there's a bunch of those things, like taking care of customers and responding to the boss's emails and turning in a report. And what's impactful? Impactful is having conversations with customers, adding something to your pipeline, moving things through your pipeline. And take a look at how you're spending your time. And that'll tell you a lot about your impulse control and your habits and your emotional discipline. And then sit back and start paying attention to how you feel when you're on the phone with a customer, before you call a prospect up, before your workday ends, at the end of your workday, when you get rejected, when you get an objection, when you get in certain kinds of objections, when you run into certain buyer and prospector personas. And Mary Lou and I, we have a, and I love the way this thing fits together. You talk about prospecting personas, and in Sales EQ, you can shift into buyer personas. So there's different, our stakeholder personas, different people that you're going to deal with, and they're going to shift along that process of making decisions. So those people, how do you feel about them? Think about your interactions. Who do you do the best with? Who do you do worse with? And start building your awareness. And then go buy the book and read, you know, the main chapters on Sales EQ or emotional intelligence. And then from there, whatever role you're in and wherever you fit in the sales continuum, you can pull multiple chapters out of the book that will help you wherever you are.
Yeah, definitely. I noticed when I was going through it that you can, and there were certain areas of immediate interest to me, and it all flowed very nicely. But you're right. You need to start with at least understanding, you know, where you are from a pattern perspective and your cognitive biases. And there's some great chapters on that to really kind of get a baseline as to where you are as a person, regardless of a salesperson or not, even though this book is obviously written for sales professionals. And then from there, you can just drill down in the areas that are of interest. And the other thing I love about this book is that Jeb has processes and he's got schematics and he's got all the, you know, the things that I love, the visual representation of how to start tackling these things so that, you know, end result is you're going to generate predictable revenue.
I love it. If we get right to it, awareness is the mother of change.
Yes.
And the only way you're in change is to start learning who you are and how you interact with the world.
Right. So I noticed in the book too, you mentioned about like the cutting room floor. There's a lot of data that, and a lot of text that you didn't put in the book. How, you know, for people like me who love you, how do we get more information on this book and your other works?
Beautiful. Well, there's a couple of great things about this book. Just like we did with Synodical Prospecting, there's a back of the house membership site that is attached to the book. We're adding more and more and more data every day to the Sales EQ website, and just like Fanatical Prospecting, we'll continue to do that, you know, over the next year. And Fanatical, we're into almost year two, and we continue to add new videos every day. With Sales EQ, we're adding tools and videos, and I've got a couple of things in the book that aren't even up yet that we're still adding in because the book is so new. When you buy the book, there's a secret code inside the book that gives you access to that. So the book costs $20. And you get a 1-year membership that's worth $2,400. and it's deep, deep content inside that membership. And only people who have the book or who choose to pay for the membership, although you'd be crazy to spend $2,400 in the membership, and you can pay, spend $20 to buy the book, but you get access to that. And it's like a very similar to site if people who've bought Fanatical Prospecting. And what I would encourage you to do is you can go to anywhere in the country. You can go to your local Barnes & Noble store, and they have Sales EQ in stock there, and buy Fanatical Prospecting and Sales EQ. Then do a double dip there, or you can go anywhere online that books are sold, including Amazon or Books A Million, and you can buy the book there. But if you want to get it right now, just walk out your door, and it should be hitting, if you're a traveler, it'll hit airports early in May or late April.
Okay, because I've seen Fanatical Prospecting at the many airports that I visit regularly. So we'll be looking for that. And other than that, digging in and finding that secret code, what's your website? How do people get a hold of you outside of the book?
Sure. A couple of websites. Salesgravy.com is my main website, and we have lots of resources there for salespeople. Many of those resources come from experts like Mary Lou. So if you come in, you'll find just tons and tons of stuff there. And at the same time, you can go to my website, JebBlunt.com, and that's my own personal blog. So all the content there, for the most part, I created and put up. And you can learn a little bit more about me as well. Also, you can go and grab my podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. You just type in Sales Gravy or type in my name, Jeb Blount. My last name is spelled B-L-O-U-N-T. So a lot of people pronounce it Blount, but we pronounce it Blunt down where I'm from. And you can catch me on Twitter at Sales Gravy, Instagram at Sales Gravy, Facebook at Sales Gravy, and just type my name into LinkedIn. You'll be able to find me there.
Okay, great. And of course, Jeb has a lot of instructional online classes that, again, what we're working on here at Predictable Prospecting is creating the assembly line, creating the engine, creating the velocity. But once we get to that first conversation, you're actually talking and you're working on moving that sale forward, that's where Jeb comes into play, because it's all about sales skills. It's all about the process of sales and being able to have these conversations with the right people, but also moving them forward or out of the pipeline. So where I stop, he takes off, and he gets you that trajectory towards your retirement and a happy life with less stress, right?
There you go. That's exactly right.
Well, thank you, Jeb, so much for your time. As usual, I enjoyed the conversation, and thank you for spending time with the audience today.
Awesome. Thank you so much.